change that to this sermon title, Arise. Horatio Spafford, some of you might know about him. His background and all of that is easily found off the internet. But he was a lawyer in Chicago, and during the 1860s, late 1800s, he had many properties that he had bought. He had much prosperity, a flowing and good practice. Eventually, though, he started losing his properties. His son died. And out of the midst of that tragedy, he sent his wife and four girls on a trip. It was supposed to be one of those trips to relax. It was supposed to be one of those trips where he would come later and he would spend time with them, a trip to Europe. And in the midst of that trip, a storm took place. The ship was wrecked. And he gets this telegram from his wife. Saved alone. His four girls had died in that trip. And his wife was saved alone, the only one out of the family left. Now, I'm not sure how you would feel at that moment. I don't know exactly how I would feel at that moment. I just know that to think about this makes me feel sad. Just this sad feeling comes over me. And not only that, he decided to go ahead and make the trip to Europe and meet up with his wife and go over the same ground, basically the same trip ground, the same part of the ocean that his girls died in. And as we read about this story, it says Horatio was on his way to meet his heartbroken wife, passing over the same sea that had just claimed the lives of his four remaining girls, his four remaining children, his four girls. It was then that he put his pen to paper and the timeless hymn was born. When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll. What does it say? Whatever my lot. Imagine that. You're going over there and you're writing this down, and this is grief, this is everything going on. Whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well. It is well with my soul. Eventually someone got these lyrics and we have the hymn we have today because they wrote music to it. But imagine going through that type of experience. And some of you may have gone through similar experiences in life. A loss of a loved one. Someone who had passed away prematurely due to a health issue. Maybe someone who, even now, you still grieve over that they don't seem to know Jesus and they seem to be going a direction that is far from him. And you wonder eternally, are they going to be saved? All these different types of grief, as I read the words of that song, come to my mind. All the struggles of life that we have, as small as they seem at the time or as big as they seem at the time, are encapsulated in these words. Is it well with your soul when you're going through trials? You know, Jesus' call in Mark is for us to respond to him immediately. This is all over the place in the Gospel of Mark. But my question was, does Jesus call out to us in our distress, just like Horatio, just like some of the distress you have felt in life and I felt in life, does he call out to us in our distress to bring us into his peaceful presence, like this picture shows here? Does he bring us to himself in the midst of those trials? And you could probably answer the question ahead of time, but I want to go to the Word of God with you in Mark chapter 5. In Mark chapter 5, it's this whole chapter of going from death to life, death to life. We could focus on the demoniac and those hills there that are nearby the Sea of Galilee that the pigs were driven off into, and that man was able to be freed, or those men, depending on the version, and how they went from death to life. But I want to focus on two other stories in that chapter. Because Jesus has just healed the demoniac. He sent the formerly crazy man home to witness to as many as possible. And people were obviously listening because Jesus sent him to that mission. But after he brings that peace to that man's life, it says this. Jesus passed over again by ship to the other side, which much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. So there he is near the sea. All these people are gathering as he's coming out of this boat. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, Jairus, he fell at his feet and besought Jesus greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come, lay thy hands on her that she may be healed, and she shall live. So he gets off the boat and is approached by Jairus, the ruler of the synagogue, one of the rulers of the synagogue. And the request is pretty clear, isn't it? My little girl's about to die. If you can just come, if you can just come, if Jesus can just come into that situation. If Jesus can just come into my situation. You ever had that feeling? Do you hear the desperation there? My little girl, she's dying. She's struggling to continue on living. In other words, she's breathing her last, it seems like. Can you come? Lay your hands on her. So we know that at some point this man must have heard about Jesus, or he wouldn't be asking that question. Jesus just got off the boat with healing some crazy guy from demon possession, and now here he is facing a life and death situation. Is Jesus adequate? He is, isn't he? He's going to step into that situation. He's going to, what it says here, sozo, this idea of healing, not just physically, but spiritually. He's going to bring about a healing in that situation. And we know the rest of the story because we're familiar with it, but let's proceed. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him, and they thronged him to the point where he is pressed, that he is not able to even get between the individuals in the crowd to get on his way. The word thronged is this idea of people right up against you, pressing up against to the point of stalling the movement. He slowed down. And along the way, he finds his other daughter worn down, and she only has one hope as well, and that's Jesus. And in God's providence, Jesus is slowed down, and she's able to get to Jesus. We read the story here. A certain woman had an issue of blood for 12 years. And we note that she's been waiting a while, but we also note later on that the little girl is 12 years old. So the whole life of this little girl, this lady has been waiting to be touched, waiting to be healed. She's gone to all kinds of measures to be healed. And so you could say she's been waiting a while at least. And she suffered many things of many physicians. Notice the word many. It keeps happening here. Had spent all that she had and was nothing bettered. So she spent everything but grew worse. Imagine giving everything you have materially speaking and people keep taking from you and trying to give you these particular cures. It's often human nature, isn't it? Someone's sick with this or that. You try to give them a cure or a remedy. And I'm not saying that's not well-meaning, but imagine taking from people to the point where they're destitute and don't have any hope left. And the person is growing worse, it says in the text. What is she going to encounter? Nothing but a slow, fading death. A lingering death awaits her. And when she heard of Jesus, she decides, I don't care if there's a whole bunch of people in a crowd and this press going around. I'm going to break through that and I'm going to get to Jesus. And it says here that she came into the press behind and she touches his garment. For she said, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. It's possible. There's this possibility. And if I could just get a hold of Jesus' clothes, if that's all it would take. Is that all it would take? It's the faith, isn't it? The scripture reading said that the faith of Jesus is at the end of time what really God's commandment-keeping people have. This faith of Jesus or about Jesus, or we would say in Jesus. You would say that she has that faith, doesn't she? Just if I can come close to Jesus enough, just close enough to touch the hem of his garment, I will be healed. Of course, you know it's a subjunctive there. And we know from the text it's a subjunctive if of possibility. She knows it's possible. She's heard of Jesus. She's obviously seeing this crowd around Jesus. And she wants to be whole. She wants to be complete. And does Jesus turn her off like the people would in her day? You know, you think about these two daughters, if you will, in this story. In the Jewish teaching, the question is, who would be the most prestigious healing out of the two here? Who would Jesus really want to spend his time with? In the Jewish way of thinking, the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, the Pentateuch, excuse me, were given by the grace of God. The rest of the writings of the Old Testament were given by the grace of God. The nation and the ability to worship were given by the grace of God. If you did not have physical prosperity and health, then you were not experiencing the grace of God. That's why you find these false teachers going around talking about every time Jesus heals, you know, especially on the Sabbath day and everything, this whole idea. Why would he touch and heal sinners? Why would he be around sinners? Why would he be around these people who God's grace has obviously not smiled upon? And here's a woman who's been bleeding. She's physically unclean. And Jesus decides to go through the place where she could get close enough to touch the hem of his garment. So who would be the most prestigious healing out of the two in this situation? Well, the synagogue ruler's daughter, right? He has much wealth. He's one of the rulers of the synagogue. He's regularly teaching. He's regularly settling disputes, likely, in that synagogue, which was a community center as well, teaching the young people. Surely his daughter. He had much belief, much grace from Adonai to get to that position. Not some unknown, poor, suffering one that had only the likely dismal prospect of dying alone. That's all she had, was this unlikely prospect, this terrible prospect of dying alone. You can see a contrast if you study the culture and the thinking and the theology of the day. One who needs grace, yes, the daughter of Jairus needs grace and God's touch as well, but she would be the likely candidate, not this woman. Yet as I read this, I've reflected and had these words. Jesus shows no unconcern for either of them. He has no lack of concern for either one. He doesn't take note of their stature or their status or anything like that, or their age. He doesn't have any of that. He is concerned about both of them, or he wouldn't be going that direction. He would not have taken that route. It's pretty clear from the text. But he puts himself deliberately in the path of the one on the way to the other. And isn't that like our God? He is able, isn't he? More than able to take care of all of our needs, regardless of who we are. So it shouldn't surprise us that Jesus does what he does, because the Gospel of Mark records this is his path. This is the way he does things over and over again. And straightway, verse 29, he heals this one daughter. Immediately, the fountain of her blood was dried up. She felt in her body she was healed of that plague. Whatever that felt like, it must have had some kind of feelings of sickness or depletion or feeling like you're getting worse and worse. That was gone. Totally healed. Immediately. And notice the next immediately. And Jesus immediately, knowing in himself that virtue or goodness had gone out of him, turned about in the press. Imagine doing that as well. If you've been to Jerusalem or some of these towns and cities where they're just all pressed into these small spaces and you're trying to like make an about face or something, they're all over you. This whole crowd is there. He's trying to turn around to get to this woman and ask the question, "Who touches my clothes?" And if you've ever read this story in your Bible reading, you get to this point and you're like, Jesus, just like the disciples, they're all over you. They're everywhere. They're pressed around you. And that's what the disciples said. "Don't you see the multitude thronging you? And say thou, who touched me?" And he looked around and to see her. To see her. Imagine having a connection with the Father so much. And not only do you know when someone has been healed through your ministry, but also you know exactly where to look for the person. Jesus had this uncanny ability. And we get glimpses of it from time to time in our lives where the still small voice tells you something ahead of time, or God impresses you to go someplace and do something and you would never see yourself doing it, and then you know why after you're there. And we have these little glimpses, but this total connection with the Father to the point where not only does he feel goodness leave him, but he also knows exactly where to look for the person, sees her, makes that eye contact. And what if you were her in this story? How would you feel? You don't have to guess too much. She's overwhelmed. She's totally overwhelmed. She's fearing and trembling. And this is the idea of, it's not just total fear, like the fear of, you know, arachnophobia, things like that. But this is this idea of just being overwhelmed to the point of just collapsing almost. Because what has just happened to you? She's trembling. She knows what is done to her. She falls down before him, tells him all the truth, which that story we have written down that we just kind of read over, 12 years of suffering. And he says to her, "Daughter, your faith has made thee whole. Go in peace. Be whole of thy plague." That's what Jairus wanted for his daughter, that Jesus would come and touch and so that we would heal her. And this is exactly what he sees happening in front of him with this other daughter. He calls her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you." And you would think that would bolster Jairus. I think that it almost appears that Jesus says these words ahead of the announcement that comes to actually protect Jairus in a way from totally doubting. Because think about that. If Jesus, his own words here, it's a play on words. He deliberately chose these words to invoke something. Not only a faith and a recognition of her faith, but also he had someone else looking on. That's Jairus. And the next scene we see is the announcement comes, people pushing through the crowd to get to Jesus and announcing to Jairus that his daughter is dead. So he uses this word "daughter" and uses the same request word that Jairus uses. and in a way preps Jairus for what's going to happen next. Isn't God's goodness totally good? Sometimes he will literally prepare us for what lies ahead. I remember one time I had four churches spread out over in part of Nebraska, and this one time I knew I was going to be out late visiting. I was down in this particular town, and as I got done visiting, it was about 10, and I don't know, I'm a little older now, so I'm a little slower now, but it was after 10 o'clock at night, almost 10:30 at night, and so the farming hospitality extended well beyond what I had planned, and so I'm heading back towards Holdrege, Nebraska, trying to get to Holdrege, Nebraska. And I pull over beside the road, and I'm trying to look at my map to figure out, okay, how do I get there? You know how those moments sometimes after a long day where you think you should know where to go, but it's kind of a little confusing. So I pulled out the map, and I was relatively new, and I thought, okay, there's a way to get through here, and there's a way to go over here. I'll pull over beside the road and look at the map. And I pulled over, and yeah, it's the map days. It's the atlas days. I pull out the atlas, and I'm looking at the atlas, and I'm thinking, there's a road. That's the road right there, isn't it? And about that time, the lights flash behind me. And it's a state trooper, Nebraska state trooper. I'm thinking, they're always around my red car. They like my red car. I don't know what it is tonight at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, but it's my red car probably. And he comes up and he taps on the window. I said, what can I do for you, officer? And he says, what are you doing here? I want to know what you're doing here. I said, well, I just finished visiting my church members. I'm the pastor of this church back there. And I was out late visiting. And I'm trying to find my way to Holdrege. And I knew there was a way to go this way or that way. And do you know, can you give me directions? Brand new, on the beat, didn't know his way around any more than I did. And I'm like, okay. I showed him the map. I'm like, can you, he had his flashlight. I said, he's pointing down here. He's like, I don't know. I said, all right, I'll just keep going, and maybe I'll hit the other highway, and I'll go north. So as I'm going that way, I'm getting closer to the place where it's called Orleans, and there's a split there. And you can go to the south or to the north, and I found myself veering off to the south and then having to backtrack. And as I'm backtracking, this strange, I don't know how to describe it, the world would use deja vu moment takes place. I had this dream. And this dream had a certain set of circumstances. And it, all of a sudden, it's flashing back in my mind because I'm on this highway. And what the dream was this, that I was at home, of course, dreaming this dream some time before, and I totally forgot about it. But here I was on this highway in the dream sometime before this actual incident, and it's flashing before my mind at the time. And in the dream, I was on a highway, and this SUV was going really slow, like a Blazer. Chevy Trailblazer. And I, in the dream, pulled beside them, and they tried cutting me off and running me off the road. And basically, we got into this, it ended dismally. So there I was, pulling onto the highway. There's this SUV, and poof, it all flies back to my brain. Totally forgot about the dream of warning until that moment. I hit the accelerator because I was passing him. He tried to rev up beside me, and the thought said, just gun it. And I gunned it, and he tried running me off the road, missed me. And I kept going, and I looked back in the rear mirror. He was trying to keep up with me. I don't remember how fast I was going, and I don't wish this to be recorded and displayed to the Nebraska police. But I know I was going fast enough that he was distant for a little while until we got closer to Holdrege, and he was still trying to follow me. And I veered off one of the ways, and he went straight ahead into Holdrege. And I remember pulling over, kind of going slow, and watching him go into the other way, and thinking, I'm gonna go really slow, like 15 miles an hour along this way, and make sure he gets ahead of me. And I thought to myself afterwards, why did that ever happen? Why did he give me the dream in the first place, and I forgot about it until the moment? And then, well, it's obvious, isn't it? He was preparing me for that very moment that I was going to face that. And you and I have had things like that over and over again, probably. Maybe not. You say, well, no, I haven't. You have. I've had that over and over again where he will forewarn me, or he will prepare me for something ahead of time through some circumstance. You know, you guys were singing one of those Sabbaths here, all these songs about heaven in our home, and I was feeling a little discouraged about that. I was like, we're not getting a home. And, you know, we look like we might get a home now. But then, that very Sabbath, I was feeling down, and all the songs you guys chose from up here were all about houses and homes. And I'm like, all right, God, you're trying to tell me something here. You ever have those moments where it all seems to be arranged, or that scripture reading, or that song, or that special music, or it just, it prepared you for something in particular that you had no clue you were going to face? How do we not say that this is what happened here? Daughter, your faith has made you whole. Go in peace. That's what he wants. Jairus wants peace. He wants healing for his little girl. And now he sees it in front of his face. And Jesus, I believe, is preempting what's going to happen next. Because the answer to all these questions and questions of life that we have, does Jesus call out to us in our distress and bring us to his peaceful presence? There Jairus is, right in the very peaceful presence of Jesus, watching this take place to this daughter of Israel. And then, and meanwhile, his daughter breathes her last. Meanwhile, we find servants are trying to break their way through the crowd. While he yet spake this blessing on his daughter he just healed, that woman, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, thy daughter is dead. So they are getting through the press, and now all of a sudden he's facing the death of his girl, which is what he called Jesus to come prevent. And yet Jesus is right there beside him. He's prepared Jairus for this moment by actually doing what he did in front of him, and now he encourages Jairus as well. They're like, why do you trouble the master? And as soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said to the ruler of the synagogue, to Jairus, do not be afraid, only believe. There's that word fear again. All these different parallel words that are in this story are amazing. I don't have time to get into all of them, but there it is again. Just believe, just trust. So he has heard Jesus heal, or he wouldn't be there that day. He has seen him restore right there in front of him. And one who has suffered long as Jairus' own daughter has been alive, according to verse 42, has been healed right in front of his face. He receives the dismal news. The question is, will he now trust in Jesus? Will he trust in Jesus when he's faced right in front of himself? Jesus' peaceful, wonderful, healing presence is literally right there. And yet he's facing this, death of his daughter. What will he do in that situation? Jesus had not left him alone. Jesus is walking with Jairus right there through the crowd up to that point, and Jesus is not going to leave him alone in the next steps up to his house. He's going to be with him all the way. That's why I said, even in the darkest situations, when a parent is suffering, when a situation hits you that you never expected, Jesus is right there in the middle of it. He's heard of Jesus, come to Jesus, seen Jesus, giving this life-giving power. Now, what does he have to do? Trust Jesus. Have faith in Jesus right now when it doesn't look very good. And it begs that question. Does Jesus call out to us in our distress, to our situations, to bring us right into his peaceful presence, to embrace us right in that situation and say, I am walking with you right through this situation? It's yes, isn't it? And we know that for sure because Jesus says, I'm going to send a comforter, the one to walk beside you as a friend. That's what that means in the Greek. The comforter to walk with you through all of these things. The Holy Spirit. So this is an enacted parable for us today. Whatever the distress, whatever the situation, whatever we'll face in the future, because Revelation 14:12 says there has to be patience of the saints. There's going to be struggles and situations. And Jesus himself said, in this world you will have tribulation, John 16, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. I have overcome the world. Does he call? Yes, he does. Mark says this. They're going, and he's going through the crowd, and he's getting closer to the home of Jairus, and he suffered no man to follow him when he got to that house save Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. That's why some people believe it's another indicator that this was written really by Mark, John, the disciple. Mark wrote this book because Peter was his friend, so and they were companions in ministry. Another little indicator there. That this story was coming from that direction. And he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue and seeth the tumult. This is now all of a sudden a different type of big group of people. This word tumult is this idea of a loud riot taking place. And if you watched on the news those different riots during the pandemic and all that, it's a little different being in the middle of a situation like that than watching it on the news. This loud, tumultuous yelling taking place, people murmuring and carrying on and cussing at the cops and all these different things taking place in riots of our day. Situations in our day. All this murmuring, loud noise taking place, but it's crying and wailing and paid professional wailers. There's paid professional rioters as well. But they're weeping. They're carrying on like this. And when he comes in, Jesus says to them, why are you making this ado, this tumult, this loud riot? Why are you making this noise? This girl is not dead, but sleepeth. There's another little indicator if you wondered about death being asleep. Jesus is pretty clear about that. And they laughed him to scorn. And one commentator said, this is unfortunate evidence that she was really dead, because they're like, she's dead. She's not asleep, just sleeping off her sickness. She's literally dead, Jesus. And they're laughing him to scorn. And that's why one commentator says it's just unfortunate evidence, because they're laughing him to scorn, that she really was dead. That there was, in their mind, no coming back. And when he put them all out, he took the father. There's that father all along the way who's heard of Jesus. He's seen Jesus in action. He was right there when he says, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. And he heard that death pronouncement from his servant who came, and Jesus encouraged him, just believe, just trust. Now here Jesus is taking him in, taking him in. Can you picture the scene? I'm guessing they had a little bit of money, so they probably had a bigger house than those typical 200 or 80 square foot houses, those city houses. It's probably a bigger house, and he's taking her, Jesus is taking the father and the mother and his three disciples up into maybe some upper room. We don't know exactly from the text what it looked like, but this house situation, bringing them in, closing the door, if you will, to the crowd, and wanting his peace to literally touch the situation. And so he enters where the damsel was lying down, or the girl, and the mother's there, the father's there. He takes her by the hand. I mean, she's laying there, stone cold dead. And I've yet to have this kind of experience that is described here in this text, where you would take someone by the hand and tell them, who are clearly dead, maybe ghostly white, to arise. And yet that is what Jesus has done. He has that connection with the Father so complete that he knows exactly that's what he is called to do. He's gone through the crowd to do it, and now he is there. There is no hesitation. He immediately takes her by the hand. Talitha kumi, which is being interpreted, damsel, I say to thee, arise, awaken. Wake up from that sleep. And she can't help but obey. Straightway, there's that word again, or immediately, the damsel rises up, walks, for she was of the age of 12 years old, and they were astonished, or out of their minds, with a great astonishment. The astonishment begins with the mother and the father, probably Peter, James, and John as well, and then it begins to spread, and it's this idea of this ecstasy, this astonishment that's beyond belief, or as their Greek definition says, amazement. The state of one who, either owing to the importance of the novelty of the event, this new event took place, is thrown into a state of blended fear and wonderment. Wow, what can this mean? In wonder, amazement, that this has taken place under their roof. Arise. And this story tells us the answer, right? Can Jesus call to us in our distress? Yes, Jesus calls out to us in our distress, to bring us into his peaceful presence. And when does he do it? He does it immediately. He's right there in the midst of every situation, whether we acknowledge him or see him or not. He is right there saying to you, I am with you always. Even in this situation, that situation. And our troops, who we talk about this weekend of Independence Day, the situations they're going through, and other situations going on throughout the world with the Ukrainian situation and Russia. I have interactions with people across the world, including in Russia, and some of them do not like what's going on there. Imagine them being silenced and shut down and persecuted when they try to speak out, and God knows what's going on in that situation, other situations that are unnamed. Every single distress, every single situation, God says, I am with you always. Arise, awaken. Do we need to be awakened in our situations that Jesus is right there, taking us by the hand and giving us life? I know I do. I feel like sometimes I'm in a stupor with some situations. And Jesus yet doesn't leave me there. He is right there immediately. He comes to me. And how is that possible that he is doing that now? Because sometime later, a different type of riot and crowd took place. And in that situation, people weren't looking for healing. They were looking for killing. And they were spitting upon Jesus. Can you imagine watching someone's flesh be ripped off of their back, thorns being shoved down on their head to the point of blood squirting out, and feeling good about it? It's horrendous. maybe people like watching these violent movies and stuff now, and they get used to it, but I couldn't imagine not wanting to do something. I mean, that's, some innocent guy is being beat up and all of that, and my human nature says, step in there. I mean, I don't know about you. And yet this is taking place. And after they basically begin to mock him and beat him and spit upon him and put this robe and send him back and forth through these mock trials and stuff, and eventually they begin to lead him down that road we call the road to Calvary. And even along the way, they're jeering him and they're yelling at him. And that loud tumult that they heard at the healing is now taking place in a different way. Crucify him. Crucify him. And I know I'm not giving you the exact order of chronology in this story, but I'm describing what took place in the crucifixion of Jesus. And yet, amidst the whole situation, when it seems like the Father is gone, the Father shields him in darkness, and he cries out in acknowledgement, Father, into your hands I commit my life, my all, and goes to sleep. And as I follow that story, Nicodemus and Joseph come out and eventually get his body and put it in the tomb, and here we are thinking that it's over with, that's it. It's a dismal situation. It's a distressing situation. How can Jesus ever get out of this situation? As you're reading through the Gospels, you know the end from the beginning of the story. But think about the situation if he didn't come out of that tomb. It would be dismal and dark for every single one of us. And yet, we know he did arise. We don't know the exact words, other than if we read Desire of Ages and some other things. But basically, the Father said, arise. Awaken. Come out of that tomb. And the one who laid down his life took it up again. And so that shows us that Jesus knows exactly what we're going through. The situations that seem like they're dismal, it seems distressful to the point of giving up. Jesus has faced all of that. He knows what you're going through. And he says, if I arose, you can arise. You can arise as well. And Horatio, he had that whole experience. He read this slide. Imagine him going from that experience of watching, going by where his girls may have literally, the shipwreck may have occurred, we don't know exactly the whole situation, going by the same route, writing these words, finding peace with Jesus to write these words, and you have it in your hymnal. Look it up on the internet when you go home and sing that song, but it is well with my soul. It is well with my soul. Peace like a river attends my way. That's Jesus attending our way. That's him coming alongside of us and saying, arise, come out of that situation, wake up. I am right there with you always. And I don't know about you, but this world can get out of control sometimes. And even if that takes place, Jesus tells us in Luke 21:28, look up, lift up your head, for the time of your redemption draweth nigh. Awaken, look, Jesus is coming. You're his child. He loves you dearly. He calls to you in every situation. I am with you right there. Arise, waken, look, see, find me there in that situation. Because this is going to take place soon, and I know literally we will arise. And literally, people who have laid in the tombs that we had long loved and we had to say goodbye to will awaken. And I don't know about you. I'm looking forward to that day. I really am looking forward to that day. Soon we will face our darkest times in this world, and it's at that time, if we are still alive when this world ends, we're going to face the darkness that the world has never seen before. And yet, in the midst of that, Jesus will say to us, arise. You are my child. Arise. I will deliver you. And we will praise him through all eternity. The closing song is in the bulletin. It's called The Child of the King. We are his sons. We are his daughters. He calls to each one of us, awake, arise in that situation. Focus on me. Whatever your distress, I am with you. Always. I invite the team to come and to lead you in this song.